Hey, Toasties. It's Brian and Zona from BZ Furfur here for Pyro Toasty Talks.
Season 3, episode 1.
I know you've all been waiting with bated breath for us to return. And we are back. And today we're going to be talking about what's coming this year. We are going to have a lot of changes this year. So we might as well just get right into it and talk about what this season has coming. Yeah. Unless, actually, before we do that, Zona.
Yep.
What's been going on? How are things been going with you? I'm sure everybody's wondering how the holiday season went and, you know, how the new year started.
I mean, 2025 was just a lot. A blink of an eye and chaotic. It was too fast and too slow all at once. I mean, I was blessed. I feel like I was running on empty, but I was blessed at the same time. It was both. I was blessed with a lot of shows and a lot of good things that came my way. I had a lot of opportunities, which is why I was running on empty, because a lot of things came my way that I wasn't expecting. So I had a lot of burden to do and a lot of shows that I had to prepare for that I wasn't prepared for. But that was, at the same time, it was hard on me because I wasn't prepared and I had to, I was burning the candle at both ends because I had to prepare for markets at the same time, prepare for shows that I didn't have stuff ready for. So it was, you know, not trying to look gift horse in the mouth and still be grateful for the opportunities that came my way. Physically hard and physically really, really, really tiring, but I still grateful because I had the opportunities, and I was still grateful for the art shows that came my way and how well I did for them. But man alive, was I tired. I was very, very, very tired at the end of 2025. So at the beginning of 2026, I was very thankful for the self-imposed break. My body said, no, you will take this break, period. So it's been nice. It's been nice to just slow down. I mean, as slow down as rearranging a garage can be. And hearing you tell me to stop moving things that I shouldn't be moving. And doctors telling me stop doing things that I shouldn't be doing, you know.
Yes, when the doctor tells you don't lift anything over 5 pounds.
10 pounds.
When the doctor tells you don't lift anything over a certain number of pounds, it is best not to lift things that are exceed that number of pounds.
That doesn't include the cats.
It does when they exceed those number of pounds.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
Frankie's even giving you side eye.
Listen.
For those of you who don't know, Frankie is our tiny cat, and we are currently recording indoors today as opposed to recording in the studio. We're surrounded by cats, and I assume they are going to make us feel rather uncomfortable throughout the course of this recording.
Yes, if you hear purring or sudden yelling because somebody is trying to chew on something they shouldn't or whatnot, it's probably because one of the cats are doing something they shouldn't.
I'm sure that our wonderful executive producer will trim all that out.
And I will probably stop him because I think that's one of the funnier things about the podcast. Some of the, you know, things shouldn't be edited out because that is part of doing the podcast.
We're professionals here.
Uh-huh. Sure we are. Thankfully had my much needed mini vacation at the beginning of the year that I so desperately need after very busy, you know, holiday seasons. So
I feel that. let's talk a little bit about this season.
I think everybody wants to know about the big thing.
Yeah, so David and Renee, you may notice that they are not on today's episode. And that's because they've been very blessed as well. They've had a number of things come their way. And with everything happening on their end, with their business expanding and with, you know, a lot of new clients, and Renee's been having a lot of success with her artwork, their schedules are not always going to align with ours for regular recording. So we've, you know, we've chatted with them about it, and they'll still be coming back regularly as their schedule permits. But this year we decided we want to kind of keep the podcast going. So in addition to our episodes with David and Renee, we'll also be doing some solo episodes like these. And we'll be, we actually have a bunch of episodes lined up with other people from around the Pyro community who have agreed to be guests on the show and talk to us and bring their own expertise to the conversation.
I mean, one of the biggest reasons that we started the podcast was because there is no other current pyrography podcast out there. There was one, and she's very, very sorely missed. Hi, Peak Pyrography. We wanted to bring the community together. In the spirit of that, we wanted to reach out to the pyrography community, and so we're working with Basha from Woodburn Corner to expand and reach out to more people in the pyrography. We're going to be having a lot more guest co-hosts with more views, which I think is going to be fun. I think it's always a good idea to have more views, more takes on what's going on, and more ideas.
Yeah, last season, we intended to have more guests on the show, but schedules didn't really allow for it. And that executive producer, he wasn't on the ball. So I think we're going to have a talk with him. So we did have intention of having more guests on last season. We were lucky enough to have Amy, who did an excellent job. And I think...
Fabulous.
Yeah, I think she demonstrated exactly what you were saying, Zona. She came on and her perspectives were a lot different. As somebody who's been in pyrography for quite some time, somebody who stepped away from it for a little while and came back, somebody who has a lot of experience with presenting her work on social media, and somebody with a lot of experience who was coming in-person shows fairly recently and just adapting to that change. I think it was really eye-opening to hear a lot of her experience. And I know for you and for Renee, it was a big treat because you two have followed her since...
I am not ashamed to admit I fangirled. If we get the other person on the podcast that I am dying to get onto the podcast, I am going to fangirl like crazy. Our executive producer is really going to have a lot to edit out because I am going to forget how to English properly.
By the way, for those of you who are new to the podcast, first of all, we have two whole seasons of episodes to go back and listen to, which are excellent. Also, the executive producer is yours truly. I do the editing of the show, and I do absolutely no pyrography. But I do...
everything else for the business that I don't do, because I don't like doing anything but the pyrography.
Yeah. It's a pretty fair split. She gets to do the fun thing that she loves to do, and I get to call myself an executive producer.
He does the IT stuff. He does the newsletter and the blog and the English stuff that I don't really want to do a lot of the time.
I do all the stuff that will bore you to tears. So I think the big change this season is going to be the rotating guest format and bringing in sometimes multiple guests on an episode.
Yes.
Really just getting as much diverse perspective as possible. Trying to build out those relationships across the Pyrography communities so that we can talk to more people. We can reach more people. More people can reach back out to us. The Discord that we've been using has been excellent as a way to get feedback from other people around the country, around the world, who listen to us. But we've found that there's a lot more people who we're not reaching. And the only way for us to be able to reach them is to widen our net.
Yes.
So what else is on the docket for this season? I know one thing that we've made a conscious effort to do this year was to plan out topics for the entire year so that we have a very clear direction of what we're going to be talking about. And then by reaching out to guests, we'll be asking those guests to talk about things that are important to them. So we've already had a few people express interest in very specific topics that they want to talk about. So I think that's going to be another big change that's going to be a welcome change for people, is getting those people on who align with the very specific topics that they're passionate about.
Yes, this season for lack of a better term, we've buckled down and become a lot more intentional about the podcast and been a lot more intentional about the topics that we've chosen for this season. And we've planned out this season a lot better. and we started reaching out a lot earlier. Because we really did want, we had a lot of plans last year, and honestly, because of our lack of planning, it fell through. We played a lot of it by the ear, and that was, you know, that was our MO, and we had a lot of things. We were just playing it by the cuff, and sometimes it paid out, and sometimes it didn't. And this year, we wanted to not have a lot of disappointed people. We had people planned and we weren't able to make it happen because time ran out. We just couldn't get it on the schedule. We just couldn't schedule it properly. And this year we didn't want to have that. We wanted to make sure that we could schedule it. So, and we're excited for the people and we think.
Yeah, and I think that the chaos of the show was part of what made it special. And I don't think we're going to lose that entirely.
We're just chaotic in general.
I think that it's nice to have, like we were sitting down earlier before we started recording and we were going through the notes that we had written up for the show. And we were talking about, you know, how we're going to, you know, present certain topics. And when it got to the point where we felt like it was getting too scripted, we pulled it back and we said, no, this is not what the show is about. This show has always been about a casual conversation about pyrography and about community and about small business and about art and about wood and about the, you know, all those things surrounding that. So we don't want to lose that. We don't want to deviate from that. We love that format. We love the lively conversation that it brings up. We love the humor that comes out of that. We wouldn't have half of the stories that we have from the first two seasons if we didn't have that fly by the seat of your pants approach to things.
Yeah.
But we are trying to mature, move to that next step of, you know, professionalism in podcasting. And, you know, if we are going to be reaching out to a broader group of people, getting more voices to be heard, it does demand a certain bit of professionalism to stick to our schedule. And as much as we hate sticking to our schedule, we're gonna make it happen.
We have to adult.
Yeah. That's our commitment. So to just to kind of elaborate, so like I said, we've already planned out our topics for this year. Just a couple of things to just want to give people a flavor for what we're going to be talking about. So just in this first couple of months, we're going to be talking about community. We're going to be talking about mental health. We're going to be talking about deep dives into texture and line work. We're going to be talking about practice. We're going to be talking about how to find your voice, building a brand, pricing your work, revisited the pricing your work episode in season, I think that was back in season one. Was, I believe, our most downloaded episode. People really seemed to want to know how to properly price their work. So I really felt that it was imperative that we got another one of those episodes on the books and maybe get some more people in to talk about their perspective on it, because there's not one right way to do it.
There absolutely is not one right way to do it. I mean, we can sit here and we could do a pricing episode, you know, probably at least once a year, and things will always change, you know, with different perspectives, and we could bring in people almost every year. I think actually that's not a bad idea, to be honest with you, and bring in different people with different perspectives from different fields, even if it wasn't just pyrography, you know, and have a conversation about how to price, you know, or how they particularly price their work, because it's such a broad topic and you can always gain some kind of idea on how it works best for you. I think the thing is with pricing especially is that, you know, we as a new person pricing your art, you look for the definitive way to do it. But that's the thing, because there is no definitive absolute way to price your work. There's no
secret formula.
There is no absolute secret formula to it. There's always going to be nuances. There's always going to be a nuance. There's always going to be a, well, it works if this, and then you have to think about that and this and that. And that's where all things come in. You know, it's, well, you know, you got to think about what the market is and where do you live and what materials did you use and the paint and the this and the that. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on. And then that's the thing, you know. I mean, we're not going to sit here and get into the whole pricing episode now, but, you know, we could do a pricing episode every single season.
And even our pricing philosophy changes over time. So
our pricing philosophy has definitely changed since that episode.
And that's fine. I think it's good to adapt as time goes on.
You have to adapt.
Yeah, so you know, don't be surprised if there's, you know, topics that we've covered before, because I do think that some topics are worth revisiting. But at the same time, we have a very diverse set of topics lined up, which I think are going to lend themselves really well to the guests that we're reaching out to. So that's just a flavor for what we're going to have. We've got a whole year, a whole season planned out. Yeah. And they're gonna be more focused, and there's going to be touching on things. I know in the past we've talked a lot about business and a lot about other mediums. I think we're going to be trying to expand that out even more to talk about an even broader range of things.
I think so, because I mean, I know this is a choreography based podcast, but the truth is there's a lot more to our art than simply choreography. I mean, a lot of us do mixed media, you know, right? Because we do painting, we carve. There's multiple things that we are doing in our choreography, but it's not just choreography. A lot of us are doing this full time as small businesses, right? So part of it is small business, but even outside of it, right? There's the mental health of it. It's hard. I don't think enough people are talking about the toll that it takes when our art isn't selling. I don't think enough of us are talking about what about when we're hearing negative things about our art, you know, when people are making disparaging remarks about our art, or when we hear another artist talk about it, you know, and we can sit here and listen to somebody tell us, oh, you shouldn't listen to what other people think or whatnot. And it's easy enough to say that. And sometimes we have thick skin and we don't pay attention to that. But there are times that it does get to you. And it's the time that it does get to you when you're vulnerable, because everybody's vulnerable. And it's those times that we need to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, even at the markets this past Christmas, right? So one of the things that we've been doing at our shows is we've been bringing more of Zona's high-end art. So, you know, like she mentioned, a lot of her work has been on display in art galleries and, you know, in different locations throughout Charlotte. So, you know, her focus has been on producing more art that aligns with the fine art community as opposed to product. So, you know, when we go to markets, of course, you know, we bring product with us because product is what sells at markets. But at the same time, we like to bring that fine art as well for two reasons. One, because it establishes credibility. And the other, because, I mean, hell, you don't know, somebody might buy it. Why wouldn't they? You know, I mean, like, it's beautiful. It's just that most of the time people come to those markets don't have, aren't coming with the expectation to spend the prices that you would spend on a piece of fine art. But one of the things that, you know, we find a lot of is, you know, when we display that artwork, the artwork that takes, you know, dozens or hundreds of hours and has to be priced accordingly, you get scoffs and you get gestures and you get, you know, rude comments about the cost of the piece. Like, why does this piece cost, you know, $50 and this piece costs over $1,000? Well, Jack, I'll tell you why, because that piece over there I was able to make in 45 minutes, whereas this piece over here was a collaboration piece with me and another artist, took 100 hours to produce, is using three different mediums, and is on a piece of wood that costs more than a used Toyota Corolla. You know, it's...
you know, or you just got somebody who just simply looks at your work and goes, I could do that better, or I can do that for less. And it's like, it's
my favorite.
As an artist, you know, that's not true, but even for that split second, you just know that it's that feeling for just that moment that they've demeaned you. They have demeaned you, even if it is for that moment. And it still affects you.
My favorite. Oh, wood burning. I used to do that in Boy Scouts.
I did that in high school.
I mean, I appreciate the camaraderie, the effort to make a personal connection with us. But, you know, it's all in the delivery. You can tell when somebody says, oh, yeah, I tried this one time and I wasn't able to make anything nearly as good as this, which is very, we're grateful for those comments. But when somebody talks about it like, you know, it's less than what it really is, it's not welcome.
You know, the comment that irks me the most is not the "I did this in high school" comment. It's the "Oh, I could laser burn this. Why would I pay this price? I could just laser burn it." That's the comment that, no pun intended, but that's the comment that burns me the most. That is the comment. Not the "I tried wood burning in high school" or "I did this in high school." Because usually when someone says to me or makes the comment, "Oh, I did this in high school," usually what comes after that, at least when they speak to me, is, "But I never did anything this beautiful," or "I could never do anything like this." That is usually what follows that comment when they're speaking to me. That's usually what it is. And I have nothing against laser workers. I mean, we have a laser. I've worked with it. I mean, we use it to cut out shapes.
We've purchased things that were laser burned.
Absolutely. I have absolutely nothing against laser workers. And to be honest with you, being that we have one, I've worked with it. I know what it takes to get the file right and how to make it work. And sweet jeez Louise, it is not as easy as people seem to think it is. I mean, it is an art form all in itself, let me tell you. And how much it is work. It is work all in its own. But it's the comparison and the demeaning tone that people put into it of, "Oh, but why would I pay this price to have it hand done when I can just have it laser burned?" Yeah. That's the tone that just makes my claws want to come out. That's what makes me upset.
I actually heard when we were over at the Makerspace earlier today, we were talking to somebody and she said a comment that I think made me realize one of the big problems with the fact that laser burn has become such a prevalent way of creation. And that is when something becomes so easy, or not easy, like you said, I don't want to minimize it, you know, but when it becomes so accessible, maybe that's a better way of saying it, when it becomes so accessible, then you have a lot of repeated patterns. And what she was saying was that, you know, she's tired of going to shows where, you know, she goes to one tent and sees somebody has things that were laser burned, and then goes to another tent and sees the exact same thing because they're buying the same SVGs. Mm-hmm. They're burning the same patterns. Mm-hmm. They're using the same wood off of Amazon. Mm-hmm. They are not doing anything to differentiate themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the turn is. I think that's where we start to see people coming back to creative individuals. That's where we see people coming back to the people who are doing things that are original. Because stuff that's AI generated, stuff that's machine made, it all has this very samey quality to it. It all looks like carbon copies of the other pieces. And people don't want that. People want things that are different. People want things that are unique. People want things that are going to distinguish themselves from other people. And I think for a while, they felt that, you know, they can get that for a cheaper price by buying it stuff that's basically mass-produced. And I think they're starting to realize that if they really want to set themselves apart, if they want to have something that's unique, then they should go to an artisan. They should go to somebody who is actually making things by hand, hand-selecting the wood that they're going to use, hand-selecting and refining and designing the patterns that are going to be on there, and taking the excruciatingly painful amounts of time that it takes to do it by hand.
One thing that I have been... It's something that I've been told, and it's something that it's taken me a while to actually believe and to learn, and it's something that I talk about, is that you have to find your people, right? And it's something that I got on a video call with some people the other night. One woman had gone to a market, and she said that some of her stuff hadn't sold at market, and she was feeling, disappointed. But she said, I won't lower my prices, but people won't pay the price that I want. And I said, well, then you haven't found your people. But that's okay. It just means that maybe you, like I said, though, you haven't found your people, you haven't found your market. But that means you have to find your market. And I think that's the thing. You have to find the right place to sell your art. But at the same time, it's a balancing game, because you have to balance what you're selling, where you're selling it. Right? Because you're not going to go to a farmer's market, for instance, and try and sell a $5,000 piece of work. Right?
Believe us, we tried.
I mean, it wasn't $5,000, but it might as well have been. But that's not really what I'm trying to get at. Like, you wouldn't try and sell a very expensive piece of art at a farmer's market. People at a farmer's market aren't looking to pay $5,000. They're looking to spend $5, right?
They've already spent all their money on zucchini and turnips. I mean,
listen, don't knock the zucchini, the fresh zucchini.
Fresh zucchini is unbelievable.
The fresh fruit. I mean, I will sit here and go shopping at a farmer's market and fill the house with some fresh fruit. And I'm all about that. So
no hate on farmer's markets here.
Listen, I love the farmer's market. But I'm not buying art at a farmer's market. So stop interrupting me. Now, at the same token, I'm going to go to an art walk. And I'm going to go to an art show. And I'm not looking to spend $5 on something. If I'm intending to go to an art walk, to an art show, I am intending to spend, a price with a comma, probably 3 or 4 digits on it. Okay, if I had that money. I personally do not have that kind of money, but if I did, that's what I'm probably looking to spend. Like, I'm looking to spend money. I am intending to spend money if I'm going to an art walk, right? You don't go to an art show without money, if that makes sense, right? So,
well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, you can go to an art show to enjoy art.
Fair. But if I was intending to buy art, let me rephrase. If I was intending to buy art, like, really intending to buy art. Really. I'm not talking a knick-knack. I'm talking about really intending to buy art. I'm intending to drop a couple of $1,000.
And there's nothing
As an art collector, right? That is the intention. So if I was a vendor, if I was an artist, I'd want to get into a juried show. I'd want to get into it. I'd want to get into one of those kind of shows. And that's where I'm bringing my highest priced art. Because I might be able to, that's my highest chance of selling my $3,000 or $4,000 piece of art. That's probably where someone who is going to drop that kind of money, that's probably where they're going to go to spend $3,000 or $4,000. That's where someone, a real estate person who is trying to sell the house. An interior designer, that's where they're probably going to go to find quote unquote cheap art to design their client's house. That's where they're going. Actually, that is exactly where they're going. Footnote, I know actual interior designers actually go to art markets for art to design their clients' houses.
Yeah, we have a friend who did an art market with us just last year.
Yes,
and he, our interior designer, commissioned work from him to present at some of the houses that they're going to be showing around the Charlotte area.
Yes, and when we say commissioned, we do say commissioned, and it was a very nice contract that this artist got. Much kudos to this particular artist.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that is what happens at these art shows. And that's great. And, I mean, good for him. But that's what we're talking about. Like, so, you cater your what you offer dependent on the show that you are at, right? That's what I'm saying. You have to find your people. You cater you what you bring, depending on your show. That's what I'm trying to get at.
So you mentioned the conversation that you were having on Discord. I want to take a moment because we've already mentioned Woodburn Corner, mm-hmm. that they're going to be we're going to be working with them a lot closer this year.
Yes, we're going to be working.
So I wanted to just give a little bit of a plug for Woodburn Corner. So I talked with Vasha about this, and I asked her to tell us a little bit about Woodburn Corner so that, you know, we can share it with the audience so that they know what kind of communities are out there for them. So I'm gonna read the blurb that she gave to us.
So what is Woodburn Corner?
Woodburn Corner is a global community for pyrography artists to learn, share, and grow their craft. It brings together burners of all levels through resources, conversations, and creative exploration, while also supporting artists who want to build and sustain a creative practice.
That is her definition.
And it's a very good definition.
It is a very good definition.
But what is Woodburn Corner to you?
Back in 2021, when I first started my career, because I can confidently call it a career now. Back when I started my career in pyrography, I remember thinking to myself, and I remember actually telling you, Brian, I was like, man, I am a self-taught burner. I am a self-taught pyrographer. I'm actually a self-taught everything. I don't do classes. Well, let me rephrase. I never went to a school to learn any of the crafts that I know. I am self-taught everything. I do the books. I do videos. I do. I literally do. I will do the thing and do the research and do the thing, and that's how I learn. I am a trial by fire type of learner. When I learned pyrography, I remember telling Brian, I wish that there was some kind of community. I wish that there was some way for me to talk to a teacher or somebody who did it that I could talk to, that I could ask, that I could say, hey, I read this thing, this technique, but I don't really get it. I can't seem to make the burner do what this technique is saying. I wish that there was a way for me to talk to somebody. And I remember looking online and I came across the Pyro Summit, hosted by Woodburn Corner. And I lost my poop. I was like, this is kismet. I was like, what is this? And I was all about it. I felt like I just dove off the deep end. I just went in. I was looking at who was going to be there. I was like, what classes? Life classes. I was looking at the classes. I was looking at who was going to be there. I was looking at the live lectures. I was all about it. I bought the summit like the next day. I was like there. I was just in it. And I do not regret at all. I do not regret it at all buying it. I do not regret being in it 1,000%. And I have been in love with pyrography since the summit, because of the summit. Because of it. That's what the summit did for me for pyrography. And so it's been really great to be part of the community. Like I made a lot of connections through the summit is how I met Renee. So we've been friends since the summit. I've met other people through the summit, and I've made connections to the summit. I've spoken to people. I've learned so many things.
It's the first place you saw Manissa burn too, right?
Yes. It's the first place that I learned about realism in pyrography. It is the goal. It is the summit was the path for me. We'll go with the word journey because I can't English. But you know, that was it.
So that was and just to so that people know, so Woodburn Corner doesn't do the summit anymore. But
no, unfortunately.
What I wanted to ask was not, I mean, it's great that was, you know, part of what brought you into the fold with pyrography. Yes. But my question is more around what is Woodburn Corner for you today? And what is it for other people?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I got so lost into the summit. Woodburn Corner is, she's on Discord now. And it's social. And it's someplace where we get to hang out. And we get to talk and we get to share our art and we get to learn. And it's nice because I can share what I learned about this thing, like a technique or this tool that I found that isn't necessarily pyro related. But I use it for pyrography. It's a tool that I use for a technique, let's say, right? And it works perfectly for a technique or to fix a mistake that I made. And I share that. Or a multimedia decoration, right? And I can share that in Discord. Right, and we share knowledge of things. Whether it's a tool, whether it's something that helps, whether it's something that we don't like. And see, that's the other great thing. We're like, hey, don't get this because, save your money. That is not a thing that you want. That is not a thing that you want. That is not a thing that you want to try. Save your money for this thing instead. You know, we've done that. We have absolutely done that. It's nice that we've met people from all over the world. It's so great that we can talk to people. And also on the Discord, we have a live room. And we were able to schedule where we can be like, hey, I'm going to go into the live room. If anybody's around and you want to, you know, hang out and burn with me right now, I'm here if you want to just come and hang out. And we've actually done that. We've just gotten into the room. Unscheduled, spur of the moment. Hey, what are you up to? What you burning? Oh, hey. And we can just sit and talk for as long as we want to. It's not scheduled. There's no limit. It's, you know, whatever. And we can just talk. I mean, and the other day, like I said, we didn't actually even necessarily burn. We were just talking. Sometimes we just need a boost. Sometimes we just need to vent. We're here for it. It's a community. It is an absolute community where we can share.
Yeah, I think a big part of I lurk in the Woodburn corner and occasionally talk about the internet or websites or artificial intelligence or other things that come up. But what I understand about not just about Woodburn Corner, but about community in general, is it's so important because most of the people that you speak to on a daily basis don't really have much knowledge of what it is that you do specifically. They may, you know, understand, well, how do you like to put it? I burn pretty pictures into wood, right? Which is a great one sentence description of what it is that you do for somebody who's passing by at a market, but to really talk to somebody who understands what it is that you do on a day-to-day basis, who can sympathize with you, who can share common experiences with you, you really need to be part of a niche community. And I feel like that's exactly what it is. It's a community of people who have this shared interest and allows you to build relationships with them, which is great.
Yes. I mean, also, what's also great is that we have live classes. Basha sets up live sessions, live burn sessions. Some of them are burn sessions. Some of them are just live sessions where she'll have like teachers, so to speak.
I heard this guy Brian did one once.
Yes. For those that don't know, well, some of you might not know, Brian has being the resident IT guy, did a class or two about websites. Because he did build our website, our BZ44 website. So he did a couple of classes on SEO and what we call the back end version of the website, which is the stuff that the customer doesn't see. So it's the behind the scenes stuff on the website. So like how to make the website run faster. So he did a class on Woodburn Corner about how to make it run faster and like how a small business owner can you simply look at it, do little tweaks to make it run faster. Really simple. You didn't even have to be a programmer. So it wasn't like, you know, oh my God, you're a programmer. So of course you would know how to do this. And it's so difficult. No, it was really simple. So he did a couple of classes on that. And then he even did like a clinic or two where, you know, you signed up for it and he looked at your website and, you know, said, hey, this is good, but you could do this and that would be better. and that was really good. So that
was nice. But she has a lot of other people on too, who focus on different techniques, focus on different, and I think it's really helpful to people.
I mean, it absolutely is. Like I said, she has, other teachers on, like, we had, Brandy Rolls, who did, a portrait class. We had, Gowrie, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. I'm probably not, and I apologize so much. She did a henna class. We have someone coming up doing a burning on gourds class. You know, we have classes coming up. We had Sandra do a class on... a website, an AI website. I mean, like, she's got classes coming up, and a lot of things coming up. So I mean, but that's stuff that you find on the Discord. So I mean,
and we'll put some links in the show notes to some of these people's work and to Woodburn Corner so that you can check it out. But I did want to
And one of the more fun things, just really quickly, that I think is really fun, is that she does a monthly contest. She does a burn contest every month where choose a word, and then you burn the thing, and then you submit to the contest, and she chooses a winner, and you win a prize. And it's really simple. And it's really fun.
Yeah. You're always excited when that comes up.
I do. I love the little burn contest.
I did want to take a little bit of time to talk about what we have, because one of the things that I know we like to do is we like to kind of relate a lot of what we're talking about back to the things that we're doing in our business at BZ Furfur. I think a big part of what we're doing is trying to kind of cope with just the changing environment. I don't know how it is internationally, but at least in the United States, a lot of what we've been hearing is that people are tightening their belts, spending less money, that it is impacting a lot of creatives and small businesses. And, you know, we've had to adapt. And a big part of 2025 was recognizing those changes, seeing where those spending behaviors were moving, and modifying our business and our strategy to better align with what's going to make us successful this year. So we do have some plans for ourselves for 2026. Oh, yeah, this definitely do. So
we're doing a thing.
Zona, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the things that we have that we're planning for 2026?
So one of the things that we are planning to do this year, we're going to test out every season. I'm going to do a collection of work. And it's going to be exactly that. It's going to be a limited edition collection of things. In the past, I have done a collection for certain things. Like for Pride, I've done a collection. For Christmas, I did collections.
Nomies.
Yes. For Christmas, I did Nomies. For Pride, I did Pride Cats. And they've always done well. So for this year, I'm going to do it seasonally. And it's going to be a limited edition, numbered, and that's it. Once they're gone, they're gone.
The idea is to start building up interest in the designs that we release, as opposed to people seeing them and thinking, oh, hey, you know, this is another product that they're going to have on their shop. I can buy that anytime. To build a sense of scarcity so that people know that if they really want this, it's something they have to act on. It's something that they have to seek out, because it's once it's gone, and I think that's a big part of what makes art meaningful to people. It's very easy to push off buying something because you know it'll always be there, right? I mean, you can put it in your Amazon wish list and know that when you have a little extra money burning a hole in your pocket, oh, well, I can buy that thing. But if you're an artist and you want to sell your original works, you need to build that sense of demand, that sense of, I need to have this, and if I don't have it now, I may never have a chance to get it. And, you know, I mean, you can always do prints or other things to make it available to people later or at a lesser price. But, you know, having that original, I think, is something that is really appealing to people. So having a limited edition collection really makes that something that worthwhile for an artist. And then for people who buy your limited editions, if they know that you're doing them on a cyclical basis, they'll want to come back and quote-unquote complete their collection. I have a limited edition from, you know, Zona's artwork for every season this year. And, you know, it takes time to build up that reputation, to build up that that sense of demand. But I really do think that that is the direction that you have to go if you want to really appeal to people in that way.
Well, we're going to try it out this year and see how that works.
I'm here for it. What about commissions? I know you've already taken some commissions yes. this year. You were finishing up commissions from last year. You opened up your commissions earlier this year. I think we're going to probably do commissions in a similar way where we'll close them and open them up.
Yes. Last year, unfortunately, I had to close them. I had to close down commissions last year earlier than I had wanted to. I didn't have as much time last year to do commissions as I had wanted. Commissions tend to be a bread and butter. I love commissions. I love doing commissions. I know a lot of people don't, but I actually love doing commissions. I love working with people. I love the interactions that, you know, the interacting with customers. But I had to shut them down early last year because I just didn't have the time. And I was able to open them back up in February. So I have started taking them again. And as long as I have the time, I will be taking them. And
yeah, I mean, your docket's kind of full right now, but... I mean, you're wrapping some up.
I'm wrapping some up currently, but yeah, I may have to slow it down only because I have a really big piece, a 4x4 piece that's sitting in my living room right now that I do have
wood,
to.
Wood courtesy of It's David and Renee.
Yes. A lovely, lovely 4x4 piece of wood that is sitting in my living room right now. That I have to buckle down, heads down, and burn for plus, a piece.
Plus some
knock
other,
on wood.
Plus some other big projects, which we will hopefully be able to talk about. We've got some big secret projects that we're working on.
I have a ton of collections in the works. Like this year, I have knock on wood. I have collections. I've got big projects in the works this year. This is the year of all those collections and stuff that I didn't get to do last year. I'm doing them this year.
And pet portraits.
Yes, I was getting to the pet portraits. And yes, this year I am finally doing pet portraits for all the people who have asked. Do you do pet portraits? Yes, I am actually going to start doing pet portraits.
You did your first one last year.
I did my first commissioned pet portrait.
Yes.
Last year. I did do 2 pet portraits prior to that. One of them was for your mother. And one of them was for one of my best friends. And there's a huge part of me that wants to steal both of those back and redo them.
Oh, Dale looks wonderful.
I'm just curious, for the people that are out there listening, have you ever did a piece of art and then looked at it and it like niggles at the back of your mind where you want to like redo it? You want to steal it back and redo it? Because I really, really, really want to steal it back and redo it. And I really wonder if my mother-in-law would notice if I stole it back and redid it.
Given some of the artwork that my mother displays from other people, your stuff is so far above the quality of some of those other things.
You know what I think I'm going to do? I think I'm going to redo it. I'm going to reburn it. And then I'm going to switch it out. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to reburn it, and then I'm going to switch it out and see how long it takes her to notice.
She'll never notice.
But that'll be the fun part for me. I'm just going to see how long it takes her to notice. That's what I'm going to do.
When do you have the time?
I know, right? I'm talking about this like I have the time.
Well, yeah. Listen. Like, I think it's probably more imperative to take commissions that are going to be paid.
I know, but you know. See, this is where I go off on a kilter. See, this is my squirrel. I squirrel a lot. For those who don't know, I squirrel a lot. I got a sticker today that says, what did it say?
I told Zona the other day when she was out with, what did I say when you were out with Jill?
Oh my God. One of my good friends, who is another artist in the Guild of Charlotte Artists. Shout out to Guild of Charlotte Artists. God, I love you guys. I said that Jill and I went out, and Jill and I are so alike that it's like the two of us are squirrels together trying to gather nuts to put away for winter.
And you can't remember where you put them.
But we can't. And the problem is that I had to be Brian trying to reel her in, but I am squirreling. Who's gonna keep me in line if I have to be you?
Who reigns in the squirrel?
Yes! Who reigns in the squirrel? Who?
Well, right now, I'm going to reign in the squirrel because I did want to talk about a couple of other things that we had lined up. So, one of the things that I know we're going to be focused on, and hopefully this is something that's going to be beneficial to the listeners, is we're going to be focusing a lot on just educating ourselves and learning about more small business topics. We made some plans to do some projects this year. And in order to do those projects, we really needed to reach out and get grants, work with other businesses, work on advertising, a lot of things that I think really went beyond our expertise, and it was pretty humbling to go through that process and realize how much we still had to learn. Because when you start applying for grants and working with vendors and working with venues and going through all of the process of building out an event, you realize quickly how much you don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it occurred to us, you know, as we were going through this, that maybe we need to give ourselves a little bit more time to learn about the inner workings of how these things operate in the art world, so that we can do it properly. And, you know, we actually made a decision to push some projects out till 2027, so that we would allow ourselves time to learn about these things. And I think as we learn about these things, it's going to be really important for us to share those back with the listeners of the podcast.
I think that falls in right in line with, you know, small business. Again, there's more to pyrography and running a small business than just the pyrography part of it. There's the behind the scenes stuff of it, right? The stuff that a lot of people aren't talking about. It's the small business. It's the, for the people who are trying to start their small business, who are trying to run their small business, you know, getting a grant. How do you get a grant? Where do you go? You know, that's some of the questions that we've gotten.
How do you write the proposal?
Oh, sweet Jesus. How do you write the proposal? Good Lord.
You know, like a PhD.
Like, who do you go to? You know, there is a lot of things that, you know, we don't know. We don't know. We didn't know. We had to ask. We had to learn about. We had to learn who to ask, how to learn, you know, and just in general. There's just so many things about running a small business that I personally, I mean, I've been in retail since forever and a day, and there were just a butt ton of things that I was just like, okay, I see. I knew how to run the store, but I sure as heck did not know all the other back end stuff. And I'm grateful to know that I knew about how to run the store itself, merchandising and all that stuff. I'm grateful to know that, because that was one less thing that I needed to know, because all the back end stuff it's a lot. But I think we get a lot of questions about it. You know, mm-hmm.
We have a lot of questions about it.
We have a lot of questions, but like, we're getting messages about it. How do you do this? How do you do that? Where do you learn about this? You know, we're getting questions. We're getting DMs about it. We're getting questions at markets, you know, from other vendors, from other pyrographers. You know what I mean? And a lot of the questions that we're getting aren't necessarily only from pyrographers. We talk to a lot of vendors. We have a lot of friends. We've made a lot of friends with other vendors at the markets that we do. We network. Well, Brian does a lot more of the networking than I do. But
it's called going and buying coffee for people first thing in the morning when it's like 15 degrees outside.
I mean,
getting coffee for all of the neighboring vendors.
Listen, you know what? It's one hand washes the other. And I stand behind that 100%, because you know what? Those days at a market, at a 3-day market, on that second and third day, especially that third day when everybody... I will never forget over the holiday, that last market, when us and like the four girls were just standing there on the third day, just looking at each other like, oh, sweet Jesus. Like, thank God this is the last day of this market, because we were just zonked. We were just so tired, and we were just plastering on that look on our face like, yes, this is it. And we were trying to bolster ourselves. This is it, girls. This is it. It's Sunday. It is the last day. It is 6 hours. We can do this. We can do that. We were just sitting there bolstering ourselves, but we were tired. We were all tired. One lady had other personal things going on in her life. You know, it was just, we were just wrecked after 3 days. You know what I mean? But it was a community. It was, we were tired. It was, hey, can you watch my booth for a minute while I go to the bathroom? Hey, can you watch my booth for a minute while I go run and get a coffee? Hey, can you watch my booth for a second while I go do this? You know, Ryan's just like, hey, I'm going to run and go get coffee. Can I get you ladies anything? You know, and it's a community. It's all about community. And you know what? We made friends, and we've done that at a lot of our markets where, and it's just like, oh, hey, we talk, and then like, oh, hey, do you know about this market? Do you know about this? Do you know about that? And we have made not just connections, but we've learned about things. We've learned about, like, that's how we learned about the Guild of Charlotte Artists, by talking to another vendor. We learned about other, not just other markets, but like other leads, other important things, just by simply having a conversation with another vendor, you know? And it's really important to and it's just conversation. It's not like we're trying to needle information, and we weren't trying to needle anything. We weren't trying to quote unquote get anything out of anybody. Just conversation. And we being kind, we got kindness.
And I mean, it leads into our last thing for the year, which is collaborations.
Yes.
You know, this how we meet a lot of other artists in the area, and getting to know those artists, you brainstorm and mm-hmm. you come up with an idea like, oh, you make things out of wood? Well, I burn on wood. What if were to do this thing for you, and we can make a piece and we can submit it together? And I think that that's just another way of building relationships, creating, right? Being truly groundbreaking artists, right? What do groundbreaking artists do is they create something new. And I mean, there's so little in this world that's new anymore, but you could still make new things by taking existing things, combining them together to create something that's never been done before.
I think one of the more fun things for me personally is the collaborations. I have so much fun getting together with another artist and collaborating with them and mixing things that shouldn't work together and making it work and just figuring out how can I make our two mediums work. And they shouldn't work. But how are we going to make this work? Right? And like I have... actually, speaking of that, today, the irony of such things is that I have a friend who I met at a different market years ago. She makes wands, actually, and she's out of her mind. I love her to death. We've become friends, and
shout out to Modern Goldfish.
Modern Goldfish.
I don't think that's their theme song.
I don't think so either, but that's become her theme song just because. Yes, McKenna from Modern Goldfish. McKenna and Brian from Modern Goldfish. So they make wands and potions and some great stuff. And
stained glass.
I was getting to that. Well, she does stained glass classes at Make Your Space in Charlotte. And so apparently she has I don't know if she's a student, but there's somebody in who took her class. I think she took her class. And she does this stained glass, but instead of soldering the glass, she makes wood, like,
inlays?
Not inlays,
frames?
Frames. And I was like, oh my lord, can I burn on it? Because I look at wood and I look at anything wood and I go, can I burn on it? Is always the first question I ask. And Brian's sister-in-law laughs at me because he's like, you can't burn on everything. And I'm like, but why? That is always my question. But why?
Because sometimes it has chemical finishes on it.
And then I go, but I can sand it down. Anyway, so I looked at this and I was like, oh my Lord, we need to play together, because what I could do with that. And the irony is that we've been talking about getting together to go play, but I knew that last year was not going to happen. So we had decided that we were going to get together this year. Well, I happened to be at Makerspace this morning and I met her, and I didn't realize it was her until she mentioned it, and I lost my poop. I was like, oh my God, I fangirled. I absolutely fangirled. And we were talking about it and fangirling, and we've made a play date. Yes, I made an adult play date with somebody.
And I think that's healthy, right? It's healthy to go and try to expand your medium, to help other people expand their medium, to create something new and innovative and unique, and to really make a contribution, right? That's how you make a contribution to the art world. That's how you become iconic. That's how you become a legend in the art world, is by being the first to do something. Yes.
And I think, I mean, it's great to be unique, and I think it's great to be the only. And I think a lot of artists try to be the only artist who does blank, and they want to be the artist and with their only name on a piece of art, right? Gotcha. And you know what I mean? Like, they want their name only to be on this piece of art, and that's it. They don't want anybody else's name on this piece of art. And it's like, okay. And it's like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I love seeing my name on a piece of art, and I love knowing that I did that. But I don't have a problem taking someone with me. I don't have a problem, like, saying, yeah, I worked with this artist, and this other artist, you know, this is their wood, and I commissioned this person for this wood, and they did that, and I did this, or I bought this wood from them, and I did that. You know, I don't have a problem with that. Side note, I hate people that don't give recognition where it's due. And I actually had an experience with that recently, and that really burns me, but that's a whole side note. But, you know, like, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and I think that's really what it boils down to, is, you know, the old adage of it takes a village is, you know, is applicable beyond just family. You know, it's everything. You know, it's and it's art. You know, art requires many people to contribute. One of my favorite quotes and I forget who it's originally attributed to, because I've seen it attributed to multiple people. But one of my favorite quotes is, I have seen the future because I have stood on the shoulders of giants. Mm. And, you know, the sentiment there is that by taking and building upon the things that people have done before you, you can see beyond where they were able to see. It's not a shame. It's not a cop-out to leverage the things that people have done before you if it means you're going to enhance that thing. And in all likelihood, those people will only be the better for you having made your contributions on the shoulders of what they've done.
I think it's, you know, it's a matter of give recognition where it's due.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't like the idea of you know, don't take credit for somebody else's work. Give credit where it's due.
And speaking of giving credit, the other thing that I wanted to mention was that this year we are looking for affiliates and sponsors for the podcast.
Yes.
So we've reached out to a few different businesses.
Yes.
And have asked them about their interest.
Yes.
In being sponsors of the podcast, of being affiliates to us, of doing collaborations with us. And if you are a sponsor and you're listening and you're interested, please reach out to us. Let us know how we can work together. Or if you know somebody who would want to be a sponsor of the podcast, who thinks that this is the community that they want to reach out to. We really do want to build the like we said in the beginning of the podcast, we want to reach more people. And the way that you reach more people is by spreading the word. And, you know, we've asked before that you, you know, you like and share our podcasts. And, you know, it's by working with companies that have a presence in the industry, they can only help us to reach more people. So really hoping that some of these companies, we're actually in the talks with one right now. And we're hoping to hear back from some others. And we're definitely interested to hear from you about who else you think might be interested in really reaching this particular group of people. So we're hoping that that becomes a cornerstone of this podcast going forward. So with that, I want to just give a little bit of a lead into next episode. So for all you new people, we record and publish every other week. So this episode should air on March 11th. Oh. And then the next episode will air on March 25th. And that episode, we are going to have our first guest of the season, Mara.
Bum, 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 bum. So, Mara from Woodburn Society.
Yes, Woodburn Society is another community that Zona is a part of. They're, you know, fairly new, but they've got a pretty strong presence on social media. And Mara is wonderful about sharing people's work. She's done a great job of spotlighting different pyrographers in the community. And we're really interested to hear her take on community and, you know, what it means. So look forward to that. And so we really don't have anything to plug for BZ Fervor right now, I don't think, other than the newsletter and the blog. Burning with Purpose, that's our blog. Embers is our newsletter. You can sign up for it at bzfervor.com. It's David and Renee at itsdavidandrenee.com. Also, it's David and Renee on Instagram. Are currently expanding the product that they're selling. That's a big part of the reason why they've been so successful this last couple of quarters is because they've really kind of built out a larger presence in the pyrography canvas arena. So, you know, we highly encourage you to take a look at what they have. And we are on Instagram as well at BZ_Furfur. You can also find us online at BZFurfur.com. We highly encourage you to follow the podcast at Pyro Toasty Talks on Instagram, also PyroToastyTalks.com. Check out the Discord. Look at the shirts that we have. Buy a shirt. Help support the show. And also check out woodburncorner.com. Woodburn Corner is has a free tier that you can join, and you can, you know, learn a little bit about the community, be a part of it, and maybe join Burn Club Plus and get access to a lot more information and a lot more resources that can help you as a pyrographer. And, yeah.
You can join Woodburn Corner on Discord, which you can access through woodburncorner.com.
Definitely a great resource for meeting people and for asking
absolutely.
Questions.
Absolutely.
With that, stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Did I say stay toasty?
Did you say stay toasty?
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty. Add some butter.